focus on cloud, colocation, data center industry trends, and dynamic market.
Well, hey, I'm David Liggett with Data Center Hawk, and I'm really excited to be joined with David Dunn. David is the Chief Operating Officer for H5 Data Centers, and we're really excited to get to speak with him today. David, great to see you. Thank you for joining.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it. Love what you guys do at Data Center Hawk.
Well, thanks. And, you know, you've been in the industry for almost 20 years now, and you've had some, you know, interesting stops along the way. You spent some time at CoreSite, spent some time at Zayo, and now in this, significant leadership role at H5. But talk to us about, you know, how you got into the space. Obviously it was a long time ago, and then just your pathway along the way.
Yeah, I think like many of us, as you get older, as you progress through your career, you kind of look back and you say, how did I get here? And for me, it was probably completely by luck. When I was an undergraduate student at the Wharton School, I knew I wanted to do real estate. So took classes, always liked big, shiny buildings, usually in downtown areas or hotel projects, just always had a passion for kind of the physical and how it, you know, how you would build into the earth and just cities and what have you. And so my first job out of college, first two jobs, actually, I worked at different private equity firms. And when I was at the Carlyle Group, the second of those private equity firms, working in their real estate fund, I randomly got assigned to data centers and a company originally known as CRG West, which morphed into CoreSite. Back in 2002. So kind of just by happenstance, I got assigned onto that portfolio. And I always like to say, I kind of came in when, you know, the party was at the time, it was perceived as really over, right? The whole fiber bust, the CLEC bust, bankruptcies throughout the business, data center overbuild, it was really just ashes. So I got in, I think, at a great time.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, it was just getting started. If you think about where we are today, and you're obviously right in the middle of a lot of the growth that's taking place. I want to talk about the fact that, you know, one of the things we've seen over the last several years is data center operators growing their portfolios, as they serve the needs of enterprises or hyperscale users and just growing that number of facilities. And you all have taken a differentiated approach to doing that. You certainly have grown over the last several years, but talk about your strategy behind your growth and what that has looked like over the last 5 years.
Yeah, it's a great question. So at H5, we've had a great opportunity of being able to grow. We're privately owned and operated. We haven't taken any kind of outside capital yet. And so Josh Sims, the CEO and founder, and myself, we both have a passion for really interconnection. And that goes back to my CoreSite days and working at Zayo, as you mentioned. And then at H5, the goal is really, hey, how can we get into tier 2, tier 3 markets, build out new edge data centers, or buy existing sites and reposition them? I think a lot of the business over the past, almost 8 years, at least from the public REIT perspective, has really been go out, buy land, big build, brand new campuses, just ground up development for the next generation of data centers. And H5, we've taken a little bit different tack. One, we've tried to focus a little bit more on smaller markets. So we've invested in places like Albuquerque and San Antonio and Cleveland and Cincinnati. We still have some big markets we play in, like the Seattle's and Atlanta's and Ashburn's, et cetera. But, we're in Denver, we're in Quincy. So trying to zig when others are zagging a little bit and really trying to, find great unpolished gems out there and reposition them.
And, what are some of the process, when you're thinking about those type of acquisitions, what are some of the things that you're thinking about? Because as you mentioned, it has, your growth strategy has put you in some of the smaller tertiary markets with some pretty unique assets. So when you're thinking about that, like, what are some of the things that are interesting to you when you're looking at, potentially growing into a market?
Yeah, I mean, you're based in Dallas, one of the leading data center markets, and you guys put out great research. I'm a true believer of supply and demand, but you go to a place like Albuquerque, what's the supply? What's the demand? I don't know. You tell me. So you can, But, you know, we like to look at, you know, how far away is a city from, you know, another population zone, right? Turns out a place like Albuquerque is hundreds of miles away. So who's serving that market? You know, there's about 2 million people in the state of New Mexico. From a, you know, a consumer internet, how are people watching the Netflixes and, you know, your content online? From a commercial perspective, how are businesses there being served by, you know, fiber providers and, you know, getting access to different clouds and just doing hybrid IT or just doing their own in-house storage and compute management? So it's just interesting. I'm a true believer in supply and demand, but sometimes you got to look at other things like just pure people, pure eyeballs, pure activity that might be happening in a market.
Yeah. And I think as the, you know, as certain parts of technology grow, you know, those areas and those markets, especially the ones that have bigger population, you know, densities, you know, certainly are interesting as it relates to the data center infrastructure that is there. In some cases, the data center infrastructure that's not there and, you know, what needs to be done to, you know, solidify that either, you know, site or city to handle, you know, the upcoming growth that a lot of us, you know, I think anticipate from things like 5G and the way that we'll use different technologies over time. And so I know that speaks into, you know, a lot of the work that you all have done. You talk about the difference between, you know, and I think about just mainly from like a portfolio growth perspective, because, you know, for those watching, like, you know, there aren't hundreds of data center operators out there. There's, you know, it's a smaller group. And so the people that sit in David's seat, you know, have a really unique perspective on the market and how they're growing their portfolios. You know, one of the things, David, that we've seen over the last, you know, 3 to 5 years in the research and data that Data Center Hawk has collected is kind of a growing divide between like the really big requirements that are out there, like that the cloud service providers have in the markets that you mentioned earlier, and then also the smaller cabinet to 5 cabinet, you know, type of requirements that certain companies need. And there's a divide coming, you know, growing between that. And just talk about how you approach your portfolio growth, knowing that like the customer demand size can be, you know, either at sometimes very small and at other times very large. Like, how do you go about growing a portfolio with that being in the background?
Yeah, I mean, our perspective and we're all, you know, we're all victims of our own circumstances and history, but you know, when we were at CoreSite, I remember a decade ago or more at this point almost, you know, there was this huge bifurcation between, are you a wholesale provider? Are you a retail provider? You know, do you want to win deals that are 500 kilowatts or a megawatt, or do you just want to focus on single cabinets and what have you? And I feel like that almost has gone away in today's environment. I think it's more, are you... you know, if you're prepared to lease to 5 megawatt users, you know, you can handle 500 kilowatts and 250 kilowatts. So we really tried to break down that wall when I was at CoreSite between, you know, some imaginary fictional, you know, demarcation point between retail and wholesale. To me, it's mm-hmm. more what is actually, what is the use for? Is it for centralized storage and compute? Because those decisions might be different, right? You might think about optimizing those in places like a Quincy, Washington, in a, you know, Ohio, in an Ashburn, you know, kind of these lower cost power markets, tax incentivized markets, you know, good atmospheric conditions versus edge, right? When you're trying to get to mm-hmm. the edge, it's more about network, it's more about interconnection. Who else is there? Can I access certain ASNs and deliver my content to eyeballs or get closer to the enterprise end user experience? You know, it's kind of that continued bifurcation of what's actually happening on that mm-hmm. storage, on that compute device, less so big versus small. It's kind of what the use is that we find.
Yeah, that makes sense. So talk about, and I should have brought this up when you mentioned supply and demand, because I think it flows into one of the questions that I wanted to talk about with you. But when you are looking at like an acquisition and growing into a market, what type of market data do you use to you know, figure out if it makes sense to, you know, acquire an asset? What's that process that you typically go through with that?
Oh man, back in the day, no third party people were doing this, right? So it was literally like, who's done a press release? Go do a drive by. are they actually going ground up? You know, you literally,
sure.
Google Maps was like too, the data were too old at the time. You had to like really, yeah. you know, have eyes on the ground, call people. Hey, can you send a photo? And look at press releases and really talk to people like, oh, did that deal close? Did they sign that 500 kilowatts? You know, it was just a very much more Wild West market back then.
Sure.
And I literally had a, you know, created these spreadsheets and, you know, all these lines and you'd really track and you'd guess like, hey, I think that place is 70% occupied. There's no way it's 90% yet. Or someone just toured it and told me there's no way it's 90% occupied. So you'd have this, all this rudimentary data. And maybe to some extent that's still done today, but you know, firms like yourself and, you know, all the commercial real estate brokerages, you know, they create the nice, shiny, polished supply and demand reports that, you know, have been in the office and industrial markets for decades. But for the data center world, you know, up until a couple of years ago, it was, you know, there wasn't much data to go off of.
Yeah, that certainly has, you know, we hope that our efforts and others in the market have, you know, been able to provide a framework at least for you know, companies as they think through their process. And, you know, a lot of people might not know, you know, if you're in this space, you do. But I mean, this is such a capital intensive market. I mean, if any company is going to invest in any type of, you know, asset over a 3 to 5 year period or longer, they're going to spend tens, sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, throughout that process. So the data behind those decisions, obviously, you know, is really important. And, you know, I think most of us really feel like over the next several years, this market's going to continue to grow. And it's one of the things I wanted to get your perspective on. You know, what trends do you think will impact the growth over the next 3 to 5 years in the market? I mean, what do you think the things that will be, what do you think the things will be that will really make a difference?
Well, I think, you know, on the demand side, which is, I think, obviously the most important, we talk about, hey, it's been so amazing to be, you know, in this industry over the past decade, specifically the past 1, 2, 3 years, the quote unquote, you know, tailwinds that certain industries just have behind them. And so that's been a great favorable position to be in, to be behind the digitization of our world. So, you know, no news there. I don't have any secret under the hood, but 5G and autonomous vehicles and just people spending a lot more time on their devices, whether it's for commercial or personal use. I'm sure there's a lot of government programs that are ramping up in terms of their overall demand of computation and storage. And we have a long way to go in rural markets. We have a long way to go of just the consumer internet and video, the social media, you know, pieces of the world, and with high definition content, 4K video, et cetera. So I think the network side of the business needs to catch up to the great applications and things that people can do with their devices. So we'll continue to see that growth and build out as people go to 5G, build out dark fiber networks, 100, 200, 400G wave networks. But it's got to catch up to the yep. applications that are being developed. And then, you know, what we see changing from a supply perspective has been a complete 180 in terms of how data center companies are being funded, grown, and developed has really been the birth or the entrance of infrastructure funds into the space. So, you know, going back to my days working at the Carlyle Group, private equity, that was a key source of money in the early 2000s for the data center, for the fiber space. It was all private money, you know, fairly high returns because the risk was perceived to be very high. You just saw a ton of companies go bankrupt, you know, no demonstrable amount of demand to take up all this supply. So you had this massive movement of private equity into the space. And then that private equity, you know, that matures, right? The investors, the whole goal of private equity is to invest in times, you know, zig when others are zagging, realize, help grow companies, and then, you know, have some sort of exit, whether it's a full sale, whether it's an IPO, you know, some exit of that manner. And you saw these private equity companies turn into public companies. You know, for Carlyle, it became CoreSite. Digital Realty went public, you know, all the others, whether it was QTS and CyrusOne, all very similar kind of backgrounds. And as those companies matured, the public markets, they saw great returns, right? If you were an investor in the publicly traded REIT space in the year 2010 to 2015, 16, even today, you saw some incredible returns. And mm-hmm. on the sidelines was this, you know, money that's infrastructure fund based that generally requires a lower rate of return because projects are seen as a lower risk. So whether you're funding a toll road, maybe you own a port, maybe you own an airport, all of a sudden people said, look, this digital infrastructure like carrier hotels, you know, huge data centers that are leased to some of the, you know, hyperscalers, this is infrastructure. It's not going yep. anywhere for a while. You have very long-term leases and what have you. So kind of these infrastructure funds that are in some cases, you know, US-based, in other cases are global behemoths, you know, started licking their chops is, hey, this is an incredible way to invest and get out, you know, put out money into the space. And so what we saw was an incredible drop in just overall required rates of return or desired rates of return to do a successful data center project. I'm trying to think, I don't know where we've seen an industry change like we have in terms of the desired rate of return going down. So what are the results of that desired rate of return going down? Well, one, data center companies became a lot more valuable because a dollar of income in 2010 was, you know, basically seen as more risky than a dollar of income made in 2020. So people are willing to pay more for that dollar, basically. And then two, you've seen, you know, the ability to really drop prices, right? Because if I was developing to a 12% unlevered yield on cost in 2010, maybe that's a 8, 9, 10% now. Mm-hmm. And I'm able to pass on those costs to, you know, the hyperscalers, the large enterprises, the small hosting and cloud companies that are starting up. So all that has kind of been a seismic shift in kind of how supply, how the sausage is made in the data center space.
Yeah, there's a, you know, I think we all anticipate a tremendous maturity coming in the space. And with that, obviously, it will create, you know, a number of opportunities. And I know one of the things that H5 has been a part of in Denver specifically, and probably throughout the company, is, you know, encouraging kids and, you know, students to plug into, you know, this industry, technology in general. I know you all are plugged into the STEM, you know, courses that certain schools do around there. But just talk about your H5 and your personal involvement in that and what that's been like over the last several years.
Yeah. So STEM education, we think it's going to be a big deal, right? So where are the next 100,000, million, 10 million jobs that will be created, right? There's going to be a whole dearth of technology-based jobs. And I always like to say in data centers, we're a little bit like internet plumbers or, you know, the internet infrastructure. It may not be glorious, but there will be a lot of jobs created in terms of yep. managing, building clouds. I mean, you see Amazon, people like, you know, I think GM or so just announced several thousand new hires for, you know, technology and autonomous vehicle, you know, type mm-hmm. of positions. And whether you're talking about just straight physical security or managed services or being able to do remote hands or, you know, jobs in and around the data center business, electricians, mechanical specialists, you know, all these jobs, I think, will continue to grow. And so we said, look, how can we help in that process? I personally have been involved in mentoring, you know, various high school, underprivileged high school kids mm-hmm. to maybe, you know, get into college over the past 10, 15 years. And we said, hey, this is a great opportunity to build a mentorship program where kids can kind of see how the internet works, right? No yep. one, a lot of these kids, I never saw like a server. I was using the internet before I actually saw how, you know, different servers were being stored or processing gear, or certainly not a data center, how they work. So it's really fun to see kids, you know, come in and say, okay, how is, you know, Instagram, how does Snapchat work? How does TikTok work? Well, it lives in places like a data center. And these are the people, their stories. This is how they got into the business. These are the types of things you're going to want to learn as you go forward. And, you know, places like Denver, and we do this in Phoenix and Cleveland, various markets have high schools that will actually specialize in STEM education, right? So they're getting a full range of experience, even at that, you know, pretty young high school age with, hey, how do we get more educated on STEM activities? So, we've been doing that the past couple of years. I got to say it's been put on hold a little bit this year, right? We're trying to keep sure. our infrastructure and mission critical people, safe and kind of away from, as many people as we can that aren't required to. So, but we look forward to ramping that up as, you know, kids and what have you get back into classrooms and the pandemic, if we're lucky, wanes.
Yeah. And, you know, I think educating the next work, you know, people that are coming into the workforce is just so important. And you all have obviously played a role in that. And I think it's really important. And one of the things that the data center industry is really working to do is, you know, identify ways that we can continue to help expose people to what we're doing, the opportunities that we all believe will be here, not just in the next year or two, but, you know, 5, 10, 20 years down the road from, you know, this industry. And so from our perspective, we always like to highlight those that are involved in that, because we do believe, you know, it is really important. You know, for those that don't know, David sits in Denver and is a ski expert. And so one of the things we were talking about on our pre-call was just skiing this year. And then also, too, we're here in Texas. And so I know there's a lot of Texans that make their way up to Colorado that, in fact, probably Colorado people wouldn't like that a lot, because we probably clog the mountain and all that stuff. But I would love to hear just your background in skiing and where you will be skiing this year. Like, where will you focus? Where does someone that lives in Colorado go to ski?
You know, I feel like the true Colorado mountain is Copper Mountain. That's kind of what I claim is my home mountain these days.
Okay.
Winter Park has great history of being part of kind of the Denver community. So I think you find a lot of locals will go to Winter Park and Copper Mountain. Last year, you know, Vail was just the numbers were staggering, right? The economy was good. So a lot of Texans, a lot of great Californians sure. were coming in to visit, New Yorkers, et cetera. And sure. You know, the lines were just absolutely insane, multi-hour long, and hundreds of people in line for, you know, for the best days, for powder days. And, you know, it's one thing that we haven't really seen more ski resorts getting built. You see ski resorts kind of expanding and building, you know, lifts that take people up the mountain faster, but we're not getting necessarily more quantity of ski resorts. So, you know, I like to say, take advantage of some of the lesser known mountains. We have nothing against Texans or Californians coming in Colorado. I personally moved from Los Angeles 13 years ago to Denver, like many others. But yeah, Colorado's great. We welcome everybody.
Well, no, that's great. I mean, I feel like normally when I go up there, I will like see people from Dallas that I know. Obviously in Colorado. I never seen him in Dallas, but hey, I see him in Colorado. But the other thing I'd love to know is, so are you a, you know, skier only, or do you ski and snowboard, or kind of what's your thought with that?
Yeah. So, you know, I grew up just a purebred skier. I grew up okay. Had the opportunity of growing up in Park City, Utah.
Oh, very cool.
Grew up with, you know, some great friends who had the opportunity to ski in the Olympics. And so we come from a proud kind of skiing background. Okay. I personally competed in moguls and aerials for much of my life. But I did pick up snowboarding actually as well. So I can do both. It's kind of like being able to throw with your left hand and your right hand. There's no bad way to go down a mountain, I guess, unless you're tumbling.
Yeah, that's good. Well, just to close it out, like, what are you most excited about, you know, over the next few years, just being in the data center industry, and what you've, you know, as you mentioned, when you got in, it was in a time period where people thought, you know, the future of the data center industry wasn't very clear. And, you know, I think the last number of years we've seen the growth trajectory, but what are you most excited about when you think about the next 5 to 10 years in this space?
I mean, gosh, it's going to be just a tornado, a confluence of, crazy new technologies and AI, and, you know, who knows what's going to happen over the next 3, 5, 10 years. Like, literally, we could be living in a totally different digital universe and how we interact with each other and technology. I mean, that's incredible. So hopefully those are all going to be great revelations for humanity, for the environment, for people, for productivity. And so it's really exciting to be a part of that, whether it's, you know, on a macro scale of, you know, big markets getting bigger, or actually bringing more technology capability to, you know, these smaller tier two, tier three markets to enable. I think one of the great things of technology is it's supposed to bridge us together, right? But we talk about the digital divide. So, you know, hopefully eliminating more of this digital divide to enable everybody to have access to great technology and work, right? I mean, this pandemic has really, I think, pushed out on the ledge of, do I actually need to be in New York City? Do I need to be in San Francisco to do my job? You know, imagine an army of coders that just really enjoy living in rural Iowa, right? Where you didn't really have much opportunity. I think that was the dream of technology, but this pandemic might really push that to be much more, you know, almost egalitarian in terms of digital opportunity. So I think it's really exciting to be a part of that. I think the Bay Area companies specifically are leading the charge on sustainability. You know, data centers, we still take a small portion, but an oversized portion, obviously, of energy consumption and carbon emissions. And you see companies like the Apples and the Microsofts and Amazons, and, you know, I realize two of those three are based out of Seattle, but, you know, Facebook's leading the charge for sustainability that really could revolutionize our power grid and really push power grids to revolutionize across the world, right? We're seeing a huge increase of megawatt output of wind, particularly in Texas, places like Nebraska, Wyoming. And so, you know, I think companies that are in the data center space can really help drive that. We've heard this slow drumbeat of climate change for the past couple decades, but that beat is getting louder. You know, as you see in Colorado, we had some of our largest wildfires ever this year. And some of them were raging while it was snowing a foot. I mean, can you imagine a fire just raging in late October in Colorado? Like, I don't think that's ever happened. And, you know, states like California, et cetera, significantly affected. So, I think the data center industry can be leaders from that perspective. So I'm just blessed to be a part of it. Really excited. We hope we're creating a ton of opportunity of new jobs, whether it's in construction, mechanical, electrical engineering, computing, storage. So I don't know, exciting times.
Well, that is true. And if you want to learn more about David's company, it's h5datacenters.com. You can learn more about them on their website. David, thank you so much for taking time to connect. It'll be fun to see you and your team continue to be successful in the future.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me, David. Thank you for you and your team for reaching out to peers of mine in the industry and helping, you know, promote data centers in general. So thanks for what you do.
You bet.